Namaste and welcome back to another episode of Sapient. Today we have yet another guest and they are from North Carolina, USA. Welcome Lacey and Drew.
Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Thank you so much. At any part of this episode, if you feel like my English is too fast, you know, you can ask me to slow down. That's not at all a problem for me. So how are you doing today?
Great. The sun is out. It's been real rainy and cold for the last few days, but the sun is out and it's going to be mid-60s. Mm-hmm. So that's warm for us.
Yeah. So why do you guys have to come up with like a different system than the whole world to measure anything?
Right? I know. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to translate that to Celsius. I don't know.
And in our school, we really don't even learn the rest of the world. No. Like, it's the American way and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My apologies.
I mean, I don't think you personally had a hand in that, right?
No. I wish early on I had realized how rebellious we were and kind of gotten on track with all the other metric system and whatnot, but we did not. I've tried, but it's hard.
I mean, you'd not believe me. Like, you know, there is a monitor onto my right that I keep looking at, and you know, I have like multiple browsers open to convert weight, currency, distance. Like, it's just converters. Yeah. Because whenever I speak to Americans, and I understand that, you know, like I need to be careful in terms of talking about measurements.
Yeah,
exactly.
As I was saying it, I was like, oh no, this is gonna be it's comfortably warm.
Yeah. So what's the deal with you? Like, what's your, let's say, current goal in life?
Oh, current goal.
Oh,
that's a big deal. I think for our overarching goal is always just to learn and then to help other people learn things that benefit their lives, you know, whether it's gardening or teaching their kids or having a successful family life. I think, you know, we just want to learn and grow and try things and then help other people do the same thing.
I would say also a connection, a spiritual connection to both their community and to the earth in whatever that looks like for a person. But typically, like, our passion is food and food and spirituality.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a strange one, right?
So, Drew, you had to step out and choose very wild things, I would say, compared to the American standard, right?
Right. Yeah. We are outliers for sure.
Yeah. Because unfortunately in today's society, right, anybody who is self-aware, right, like who likes to think, I would say, is seen as like an outsider or an outcast or like, you know, like even hippie. And I feel very weird about it, because it's like either you're part of my tribe or you're not.
Right.
And
Well, I think people want a sense of belonging. Yes. And then when they don't know where to put someone, it makes them feel uncomfortable. And I think that's switching a little bit, though. I think we're noticing that. I wonder, how is it where you're at? Do you feel like an outlier where you're at?
No, because fortunately in India, we have not yet lost our roots, I would say. Compared to other countries. So that, I think, the reason is 40%+ of Indians are farmers. So it's like, you know, you know, you could be a software engineer, but either you are farming or somebody in your house, like whether it's your brother or sister or, you know, father or mother, within that micro family, someone is farming. So it's like people have not yet lost that touch, you know, to reality. But we are seeing
reality. I love that.
Yeah. But we are seeing more spoiled brats coming up.
I wonder if it's like the next generation, because for us, I know my grandparents farmed and Drew's grandparents farmed, so it like skipped a generation of our parents all just left the farm. So I think we're all just one generation, most Americans, removed from being in tune and in touch with growing and animal care. But I think we're all kind of aching for it. It's kind of fun to see there's a wave of new people moving into that lifestyle really hoping.
Well, and I think some of it was like in American society or in that generation, my parents' generation, it was an effort for convenience. Mm-hmm. Was we kind of always talk about this, like they wanted an easier life. They didn't mm-hmm. want to get up in the morning and shovel manure or take care of animals. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted it easier and more convenient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within our society, that meant like microwave meals. Yes. And not having children. To be connected to your food. What's that?
Neglected children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they also, I mean, I think they wanted wealth mm-hmm. too. And they thought, well, if I get an education and I work in an office, then I'll have more money. And that yes. was, I think, another huge pull. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah. I feel like the problem is, you know, once you start talking about farming, because see, right now I live in a city which, have you heard of a concept called as 10 minute cities?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I live in one of those guys.
Wow.
Yeah. So Bangalore was deliberately designed to be a 10 minute city. So for those people, you know, for my listeners who do not know what is a 10 minute city. So 10 minute city is a concept by United Nations, where they thought that it would be a good idea if every citizen of the city had access to education, healthcare, and utilities and entertainment within 10 minutes of their reach. Mm-hmm. So that's what is today's.
So they set it up around easy transportation systems mm-hmm. and things like that, right? Like
yes. So they made sure, you know, like there is highly dependable transportation. There is mm-hmm. well-designed architecture, like deliberate architecture. So it's like mm-hmm. probably every 10 kilometers, just give me a second, let me look into miles because I'm very bad at it.
I think that's like 3 miles.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, hopefully you're better than me in that. yeah, it's exactly. It's 6.2 miles. So yeah, the plan okay. was to have like, you know, one hospital every 6 or 7 miles, let's say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And schools and everything. But the problem that arise, right, let's say from that process is people have become dependent. Like it's almost like people have become domesticated animals at this point of time where
yeah
they need somebody to feed, they need somebody to be taken care of. And yeah, that's a very dangerous thing, I would say.
Oh, that's so fascinating. We were just talking about this a couple of weeks ago about, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of at Passover, which is a Jewish holiday and it's coming up mm-hmm. where yeah. Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt. And the story goes, 80% of the people actually opted out of leaving. Because mm-hmm. they were comfortable and all their needs were taken yeah. care of. And so we were kind of trying to like match up. How is it mm-hmm. that way now? Mm-hmm. And that, oh my goodness, is like exactly what it was, right? Yeah. You have everything you need. Somebody's taking care of it. But mm-hmm. now you're completely reliant on that.
But, but also at the same time, kind of enslaved.
Yeah.
You know, like.
It's almost yeah.
I would say it's literal, you know, literal sense because right now we have mobile apps, right? Where you could order anything and it could be delivered to you within like 10 minutes, not even 10 minutes. You know, wow. like they are running guarantees, you know, like if you don't deliver to you within like 8 minutes, it's for free.
Wow.
And it's anything. Whoa. Like if I could show you, it's literally yeah. From everything to anything that you could ever imagine. Like, do you want a Samsung TV? Like, do you want a refrigerator? I don't know, washing machine, God. Like iPhone.
In 8 minutes.
Yeah, in 8 to 10 minutes maximum. And
wow.
That's during...
How big is this? Sorry. How big is this city? Like how many people?
So my city is 80 lakhs, which is like... Let me just quickly look at it. Sorry.
Sorry.
So Bangalore population is around... Let me just see millions, right? It's like 13.6 million.
Whoa. That good.
There's that many people and you can still get stuff in 8 minutes.
Yeah. So it
that's I, wow, my mind can't even.
It's like 286 square miles. You know, the city, yes. And
everything is like broken down into the 10 minutes.
Yes, yes. Typically. So if you just walk in my city, you know, you can understand this architecture and, you know, the design decisions where you go, okay, you know, this was the reason you put this particular building here.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a deliberate design, and even commercial zones and everything has been designed in a particular way. Because in India, there is nothing called as like, I would say industrial zones or residential zones. You know, now they are coming up with it, but the earlier way to indirectly enforce that was to make the roads bigger where they wanted commercial growth.
Right.
So that was like an indirect thing. Yeah.
So what happens when you get outside of the city? Mm-hmm. What does it look like? Is it just connected to another city, or do you have agriculture out there?
We have huge agriculture. Even in some part of my city, even till today, we do farming.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we could just quickly show you, like, can you look at my phone? Hopefully. Yeah, it zooms in. So
it's a little blurry, but yeah.
Okay, let me get it near. So, you know, you can get anything and everything within like 8 minutes. Like, look at it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, there is unlimited choices, whatever you can get. And it does not only stop at food or, you know, anything. It literally goes to iPhones and stuff that's like crazy expensive. But it's as you said, Drew, you know, it's like pushing people in a certain direction. Because if someone has a habit of, you know, like going on a shopping spree, imagine how screwed they would be, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things I think have, it's like the full circle of understanding that, okay, gaining wealth, what does the wealth do? It gives you the ability to buy more. Mm-hmm. And so people started buying more as a way to kind of satiate that craving to create. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're realizing is that it's very dissatisfying. And we can see, you know, on the charts, how American health has gone, and it's just quickly going negatively, right? Yeah. Like terribly.
Yeah.
And so it's not like getting off the farms made us healthier. It's not the wealth made us healthier. We're just,
or happier.
Or happier. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 So I don't know. It's interesting. That's, is there a deep sense of like, it sounds like you kind of are, even though you're all so close and, you know, you have this easy access to one another, you're still living very individualized lives. Mm-hmm. Sort of separate from each other.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we don't do anymore is we don't do any Amazon shopping, which here is like, you know, the biggest like fast order system, because we found that not only do we spend more money when we had it, but we also found that we interacted less with our community because we had, why would we go into the store ever, even, you know, the big box stores and see people in real life if we could just quickly order it and it would be here next day.
Yes.
And I mean, it eliminates that need for human connection that is intrinsic when you have to leave your house to go get stuff, right?
Yeah.
So,
but the, you know, scary part of that is right now Amazon is testing on drone deliveries in my country.
Yeah.
And
here too.
Right now it's like, you order anything on Amazon, it's like within 30 minutes, it will be there. You know, it used to take two days, you know.
Wow.
Now it's like,
yeah.
I almost feel like it's like a genie, right? Like you just wish and it's here.
Yeah.
And yeah, there is no way to return it. You know, if you did not want, it's messed up too. Like you're stuck.
Well, that's interesting. Like, so that consumerism is a very interesting, the not being able to return it part. Mm-hmm. Because what I hear from more and more people here is that if they want to return something, Amazon just says keep it or just throw it out.
Yeah.
You know, like they don't want it back. Mm-hmm. They don't have a system in place for returns, really. It's almost like the consumerism is going so fast that they're like,
they can't keep up with it.
It's cheaper for us to just let you have it.
It's almost like Afghanistan, I think.
Yeah.
I don't get the reference.
Yeah, so the reference is it was easy for United States to leave all the weapons and machineries behind rather than taking it back.
Never mind. Oh my gosh. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, let's say you people are fighting so many wars, you know. Of course, I understand you might forget one or two here and there.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that in a public hearing, I think, where a general said it's easier for us to buy new guns than to get back the guns from overseas.
Yeah,
and I just kept laughing at it for like 2 to 3 days because I was like, how imagine a world where that's a fact, right? Like where,
right,
you know, yeah, your responsibility towards nature is, you know, diluted, right? Mm-hmm. For just like instant gratification kind of greed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's no there's no consequence consideration. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yeah, but what's easier right now? I don't have the time to think about that. Mm-hmm. It's what I need right now. I need right now. It's just this urgency.
Yes.
And there's no patience and there's no even satisfaction in getting something that you don't have to wait for. Mm-hmm. So then you just get more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that perpetual.
I mean, I think that's a big problem because, so I have a brand called as Taruvana, where we teach people to grow food, like silly stuff. Mm. And I feel like I shouldn't be having a company on that. Like, you know, I should not have a corporation for that because it's just like, you know, chipmunk knowledge, right? Like that has been transferred to us from generations to generations for millions of years. And all of a sudden, right, I find myself teaching and, you know, helping people to grow food. So
what food do you teach them to grow? Just like anything and everything?
So for 95% of people, what I've seen is asking them to divert from growing flowers to fruit and vegetable works.
Mm.
Because in India, it's like, not even in India, in many countries, I've seen that people start growing flowers, right? Because it looks good. It smells good. And fortunately, more women are into gardening. And I always use that word fortunately because if men got into gardening, like house gardening, house gardens would look ugly.
Right.
And that's like a direct experience I have got because
somehow,
you know, like men look at it as a utility, right? Like what is it used for me? Where women understand the aesthetics, so they're like, okay, if I put lily here, jasmine there, you know, it will look good, it will smell good. Like, so they think more about aesthetics. So what we usually do is we help people understand that growing your food is not expensive, it does not take time, it does not need a lot of knowledge. And we help them, you know, grow like small things like cucumber, radish, carrots, wherever, you know, in their apartments or whatever. And once they get that first harvest, right, like they get that boost, you know, it feels good for them because they grew something that they could eat. And somehow it always tastes better. It's a slippery
slope. you get addicted to that. Then you're like, what else can I grow? And then suddenly you need 10 acres.
Yeah. Yeah. And surprisingly, like everybody says, I grew a carrot and it was very tasty. I don't know how does that work. To be honest, I feel like it's the same food, but the nutrition values are different because in the past, like 10 to 12 years, throughout the world, we have lost more than 800 heirloom seeds. Like they're extinct.
Yeah.
Like nobody knows where the fuck it is. Sorry.
Right.
So I talked to a lot of seed banks and I realized that seed banks are like the great libraries, like of Romans, Greeks, of India. And eventually all of those universities were burnt off and knowledge was gone because somebody tried to hoard it, right? And seed banks are holders, like mega holders, because they are like, get me as much as seeds and I just need to store it. And I'm like, that's the stupidest move you could do. Because, you know, the best thing for you to do to preserve a seed is just get in domestic circulation, let everybody grow
it. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, they're like purist in the fact that they want that one strand of genetics to maintain the same where, you know, we talk about this a lot. It's like, if you continue to grow let's say a carrot on your property in your soil with your biome in that relationship, that carrot over time adapts to your needs.
Yes.
And in fact, like, Lacey found this really crazy like study where if you put the seed in your mouth and then plant it, the plant will grow more of the nutrients that your body directly needs from that carrot. So it, like, and it works with like all the plants. So it's just like, I mean, it's fascinating. Like, that to me is more important than maintaining a specific genetic line that may or may not, you know, be adaptable for for the environment.
Well, and it speaks to how intrinsically woven we are with our food if we choose to be, and how the divide, the separation we have now, how much of an impact it has. Like, imagine if, you know, we still had outhouses, you know, or we pooped and peed on our properties and it stayed on our properties and it nourished the soil, and then the plants grew with that in mind, you know, like, it's this whole degree of separation removal that we, who knows what the impacts are. Has that ever even been studied? I don't know.
I think there have been multiple studies on that specifically. Because governments have started to realize that monocropping or intensive agriculture doesn't work, because even if you look at United States, I think it's called federal some program, I don't remember it. So it's like essentially government pays you to leave your ground barren, like you don't have to farm for 3 years and then they pay you. I don't remember the name exactly, but they pay you a good amount of money actually to leave it barren. And if anybody even studied mathematics for a second, would ask why does that make sense? Like, I'm doing all the farming activity throughout the year, I'm not getting paid enough. But all of a sudden, government comes in and says, you know what, like, leave it empty for 3 years, we'll pay you. That should not make sense to people.
Right.
Mm-mm. No. Yeah. It's to control the value of
the food supply.
Food supply.
Yeah. But, you know, there is a direct proportionate between foot traffic and, you know, yield, right? So it's like people use heavy equipments, you know, everywhere, you know, we use heavy equipments, and it's been proven that, you know, heavy equipments cause declining carbon count, like carbon presence in soil. And I don't know why, you know, I whenever I talk about this in a workshop or in a public, right, and people ask me, so what, like, elephants walk on the same earth, right, and they are very heavier than the machines. And then I go, okay, but elephant does not walk in a straight line, you know, covering your entire property. Right.
And they poop and they pee. Yes. And I mean, there's some, they eat and they, I mean, it's just such a different, it's not the same.
Yes. And, you know, like, we are not like, so when people do, you know, extensive farming, tillage is the biggest issue, right? You know, because they just, you know, rip the earth up, and people don't understand aerobic and anaerobic enzymes and, you know, just bacterias, and they are just like, you know what, like, farmers put in soil some seeds and it grows. And that's the, I think, like, the stupidest form of human knowledge, I would say. Right. Because they found out in Amazon that, you know, if a tree falls down, right, like, if a tree, let's say, it got burnt or it got, you know, it was cut or whatever, mycelium forces other plants, right, to give nutrients and water to the dead tree so that it could survive for hundreds of years. So that means that there is somebody who is probably more intelligent than us, right? If they are like, okay, you know, if I'm a mango tree and you are, let's say, I don't know, jackfruit tree, right? I should not be supporting you because you're not of my species, but forest trees do that.
They do.
So there has to be somebody more intelligent than us, right? Figuring all this shit out.
Well, I mean, it's like, and all of that is mimicked in human relationships too. And back to, like, the isolation of, you know, I sit in my apartment and I order what I need versus going out and seeing people on the street and meeting people as you're riding the subway, or, you know, all the things that we miss out on in terms of cross-pollination even, and that inner web that I think nature is just a representation of us and how we thrive. But we're, you know, we're really cutting ourselves out and growing ourselves in that monoculture system. I feel like the 10-minute city is really like a, okay, how do we farm people?
Yes. But the more worrying fact is, you know, they're now planning like 5-minute cities and you know, like some insane, insane things that I don't know how it's going to turn out, because it's already shit and I don't want to get it shittier. So let me ask you one, like, let's say half a deep question. Like, once you started on this journey, right? Once you started like understanding, okay, like we are different than normal people, right? Because to be honest, growing your own food is something that's seen as a revolutionary thing in today's world. Because to be honest, most people are not even capable of that. So my question is, when did you realize that, okay, this thing is bigger than me? And, you know, like bigger than my family, you know, it's very important for this planet.
Mm. Well, I would say like there's a little bit more acceptance of the like term homesteader within American culture because of, you know, our roots of being pioneers and taking over indigenous land and, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like we have always been, American society has always been pushing the gritty and pushing and
claiming
and frontiersmen and all of that. So if you tell somebody that you're a homesteader, which is the term that we like to use, there's kind of like a nostalgia to it. People are kind of like, oh, you know, my ancestors did that. Like I could never do that, but that's cool that you guys do that. Mm-hmm. Is kind of more of what I would say we hear.
I think there's been, over the course of the last few years, a huge surge of people who have realized, oh, I shouldn't be passing off these responsibilities. And not only that, but there's a joy in doing them. And I think what our passion is that, you know, we hear a lot from some of the bigger farmers, the bigger names in the sort of in regeneration and sustainability, that we really need to apply these things to these monoculture systems. We need to do no-till in monoculture systems. We need to do regenerative grazing in these hundreds and thousands of acre farms. What we've realized is that is something that translates to a small scale. And if you take all of these people who are small scale doing it themselves and teach them how to do this, how to use these tools on their little properties.
Yeah.
Combined, they're going to have a bigger impact. And I don't know what the Roundup situation looks like in India. I feel like I heard you guys banned it a long time ago. So I could be wrong about that.
Like glyphosate?
Glyphosate, yeah.
Nope.
Monsanto, I heard, has been kicked out of India, but maybe I'm wrong.
So they banned it? They banned a particular company?
Yeah.
And it's like the Voldemort of the Harry Potter, right? Like the one who should not be named.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They tried to ban it, but they banned one let's say one product, not everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Glyphosate still exists in some phases, and the problem is there is not enough rigorous testing to understand where it is still lying. Like where does it still sustain, and that's the problem.
In the water, everywhere, in your bellies, everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, the point of that was just that what I've read is that when, you know, we talk about these big farms not ceasing and desisting with those chemicals, but actually it's the individuals, the homeowners, who are buying and using it much more liberally than they should, and having, and a lot of the impact of those particular products are actually worse on from the small scale people than they are from these giant monocultures.
Yeah.
And so if we can have that impact negatively, we can also have it positively. And I think that's where we see a lot of need, is that we see a lot of people jumping into like a homestead way of life, but they're doing it in a very conventional way and having a negative impact, not only on their immediate place. Because what we'll see is people will grow a garden the first year. They'll till it up, they'll grow a garden, they'll have great success. And then of course, what do they do again next year? They till it again, and then they till it again, and they till it again. And so slowly their gardens become less and less successful and they need more and more inputs. And so we're trying to help people realize that, okay, this is not the model by which we should all start and measure our successes, we should, you know, look at a different way of using, you know, permaculture techniques and things that work with nature to maximize the abundance that our properties all hold, because we don't all need 20 to 50 acres. We don't even, you know, one acre is enough to really sustain a family and more, much more. So it just really comes down to, okay, how do we help people better maximize what they have access to, even if it's an apartment or like a less than an acre, you know, there's still so much. And that's where we started. We started growing on a stoop in an apartment and we became, you know, obsessed with that and maximizing that space. And then we moved up to a less than a quarter of an acre, which is a really small city lot here. And we had chickens and bees and a garden that was produced enough for us. And we sold it at a farmer's market. So, you know, there's just really like a huge potential that I think we tend to look at. We look past ourselves to the big guys to blame them. And instead of owning, okay, what am I changing and shifting and improving right here where I am? And almost from the very inside out, because even if you don't have property, you can be consuming better, right? Like you can be making choices that support the people who are making.
Yeah, but decisions. That would be against capitalism.
True. I think they can go together. I've seen examples, but it does take, you have to be a well-educated consumer. And I think that people choose convenience over over that well-educated fact most times. And I don't, you know, I don't blame them. We live in this fast-paced society that makes it seem like, you know, all of the like activities for our children.
But guys, I have a question. I have a question for you. You said that, you know, I always hear this, that we live in a fast society and people do not have the same attention span as they had like 100 years ago, whatever. And I think we are totally against it. Today, we are a very slow culture. If you look at it, right, there used to be a time when every farmer used to do seasonal farming, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, until even 1920s was the earliest record that I went through where people were doing companion farming. And that was a fast-paced life, right? Because every season you had to adopt, every season you had to change your methods, every season you had to change what you grow, how you consume. So you're constantly adopting. Whereas today you could eat mango for 12 months in a year.
That's true.
And you know, you could eat any seasonal fruit for literally, you know, every year, every day of the year. And nobody thinks about, okay, like, mango is supposed to be in summer. Why the fuck is it in? It's like snowing. I'm still eating mango. Like it should not make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't
make sense.
And then they say, "But who cares? Because it tastes delicious."
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, but
you know at what? Yeah. Nobody says at what cost.
No, but also I don't think those people have tasted real mango, Drew. I would say.
Right.
Because.
Yeah.
I feel like, just like you, anybody you know who eats fresh food for the first time, they get addicted onto it. It has a similar properties of a cocaine, you know, like it will always have you chasing that high, right? Of responsible food, I would say. Responsible food, meaning you know where it came from and how much work it took you to grow. And
I like that, responsible food. That's a good one.
And I also feel like that's one of the core reasons for obesity in today's world. And modern science absolutely fucks it up by saying, you are addicted to food. And I'm like, no, you're not. Because ask anybody who has grown a freaking, I don't know, a cucumber. Ask him and they would say that eating fresh food requires less food.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And I think... You can support me on this. Like when you eat fresh food, you don't eat a lot actually.
Yeah, I would say that we've been trained to tap into our primitive life of, you know, salt and sugar. Like, you know, you think a primitive man, you would find a source of salt and you'd be like, I got to eat all this because I don't know the next time I'm going to find salt or sugar. Same thing.
No food at all.
Yeah. And then, you know, all these food manufacturers have found like, okay, we'll sprinkle it with salt and we'll sprinkle it with sugar and they'll eat whatever we put in the middle.
Like, well, and even just thinking about carrots, you know, okay, because you mentioned carrots. Mm-hmm. You know, in America, we have these little bags of carrots that are like bite size. Mm-hmm. You know, they're peeled and they're ready to just eat. They're like, they're like this big, and you can.
You don't have carrots. You don't have those.
No,
you don't
have loose carrots. Definitely not.
We call them baby carrots.
Baby carrots. And what, you know, the industry did is they took the ugly carrots, they put them through a machine and peeled them and made them, you know, look good, right?
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, they're not wasting it, I guess. But at the same time, you can sit there and you could eat, you can consume like 85 mm-hmm. carrots yes. sitting there because you're just like, oh, this is so easy, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're going to even the process of taking a whole carrot, peeling it, cutting it, you're just not going to eat as many carrots.
Yeah. And you, know? And, like, and you would also just start consuming raw carrot, like just like. Take it out of the soil, wash it, eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I hope every gardener has experienced that, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I feel like, okay, this is my like concept or theory that I don't know whether it has been backed up or not, but I feel like the reason we eat a lot is because we're not able to find nutrition in food.
Yes.
Yeah.
So our body is constantly craving like nutrients.
Yes. Yeah. It's a biochemical reaction. When you feel hungry and you feel like you need to eat a lot, it's often, to do with, I think you're still there. You okay?
Yep. I think someone okay. wanted to send some, just kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, no, yeah, it's definitely like that's one of the things she was saying. She changed mm-hmm. her diet and she noticed she was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And she noticed that when she was always hungry and she would binge eat all mm-hmm. the time. And she would binge eat quote unquote healthy food, but yeah. she was never feeling satiated. And then she started adding like a lot of fats, butters mm-hmm. and grass fed meats, and all of those cravings mm-hmm. went away. And she lost a ton of weight because yeah. she stopped binging and needing that. Mm-hmm. It was like a satiation issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also feel like, you know, not only in United States, but also all over the world, we are slowly going towards a fashion of food rather than purpose, right? Like today, people want more and more rounder oranges and, you know, orange looking yes. oranges rather than actual healthy food.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because when I did my research, I found out because if you know our history, India's history a little bit, we were ruled by Brits for 250 years. You know, we were colonized for 250 years. And them, like them being the original corporates, right? They wanted to promote, I would say, well-being with a very big air quotes of the people. So they started to do an award system where they would award the best farmer in a particular district. And one good thing that they did is they used to test the food, whatever was grown, and it was stored in archive. I don't know why they did that, but I'm very thankful that they did that. But they yeah. also recorded how much cost was input, right, in terms of fertilizers and seeds and etc. And how
right.
and what was the output per acre. So it was a very science-based let's say documentation that they did, and looking at that, and then we looked at data from 1992-93, and we found that in orange, everybody eats orange for vitamin C, right?
Right.
Vitamin C went down by, I think, by 72%.
Wow.
And
from 1992.
Yeah, no, from 1918 to 1992, not even like 100 years.
Yeah.
So vitamin C went down by 75%, I think, and 74 or 75, and sugar went up by 280%.
Whoa. Man.
Yeah. And of course, NPK also did increase, right? So phosphorus was there, iron was there, which is not supposed to be you know, that bigger of a nutrient trail in an orange.
Right.
Yeah.
But we do that for looks, taste, and just like, I don't know, it's just a messed up world, right? Like,
yeah.
And
yeah, that's very similar to in America, like the apple is the same way. You know, we have a, I don't know if you've heard the saying, but we have the saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Oh my God. Yeah. And, yeah.
And that was, I believe that was the older apples would have, they'd be like white on the outside. They'd be covered in like beneficial fungus and bacteria. So when you ate that, you were essentially like inoculating yourself with like a healthy gut biome.
Yeah.
But now in grocery stores, you know, they polish them and wax them. And now they're using like a synthetic something.
Spray.
Have you heard of this spray called Peel?
Oh, yes.
Upheal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like they're covering fruit in that now. And it's
plastic wrap.
Organic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually inspired to look into food, right? Really by his name is Paul Bergner. Have you guys heard of him?
No,
like he's an author who has written more about food and nutrition of food and just everything, I would say. So his, you know, like preface for the book is the same thing as you said, because someone told him, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. And he was like, how the fuck's that supposed to work? Nobody taught me on the technical end. And he went to look into it. And that's when he found the biggest like variations in nutrition and continuous falling nutrients, like every year on year. Because if I just look at it right now, you know, in apple, right, because you were talking about apple, in 1914, there was around 13.5 mg of calcium, where in 1992, there was just 7
mg. Wow.
And, you know, it's like 48% decrease. And that's unexplained. Like, why did it go down? Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Probably nobody cares.
That was it's a combination of all the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. Well, and so like food is not even food anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's the mirage of food.
Yeah. And the most scary for me is spinach. So everybody loves spinach. Everybody that I know loves spinach, you know, and our parents have drilled into our head saying, you better eat spinach for iron. I was really furious, like because I was like, there has to be something different, right? Like something, I would say not different, but something unique about spinach that other plants do not have. And I looked into it actually, and thanks to our ex-rulers for this data, I would say, you know, just to give an example, I'm just looking at the data because I don't want to misquote. In 1948, by the way, that's when India got its freedom from Brits.
Okay.
Every 3.5 ounces of spinach contained 158.4 mg of iron.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so 1948, the same 3.5 ounce, and you got 158.4 mg of iron, right? Now, from 48, you jump to 92. It's not a lot of time, right? It's not even 50 years.
No.
The same 3.5 ounces had 2.71 mg of iron.
Whoa.
That's insane.
That meant...
Wow.
Yeah, that meant if your grandfathers ate like 3.5 ounces of spinach, right? To get the amount of iron. And for your father, right? Literally the next generation. Like our fathers, for them to get the same amount of iron, you would have to eat around, let me just look at it, 206 ounces of spinach.
That's crazy.
I mean, I don't
think that's why we keep eating so much.
Exactly.
That's why
And that makes me think about, so the other thing we haven't told you that we do is we run a private food club.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is probably the most revolutionary thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I almost hesitate to even say it on the internet.
Yes, please. Because, please don't use that word. A lot of people have disappeared saying that word. Yeah. A lot of people have disappeared saying that word. A lot of people have disappeared saying innovative.
Right?
Yeah.
But so we have gathered small farmers that care about how food is grown, and generally within 30 miles of us.
Okay.
not 10 minutes. very, very close for us. And we all buy and sell, or we all buy from those farmers. So like our goal is to replace the grocery store.
Okay.
And
got it.
I'm very curious now. You have me like thinking, like, I bet if we tested some of that stuff, like I know the vegetables are way more nutrient dense. I know the meat is way more nutrient dense. I'm curious,
compared
like
to what we would get at the, even at the like, local,
like I mean, from the grocery store to the farmer, it would be interesting to see.
I would be interested in knowing this one question, because I have found the answer for that in India, but I don't know over in the United States. So because you guys do farming, right? Gardening or farming, whatever you want to call it, right? And your neighbor, if they use chemicals,
right?
And when you test your food, does chemical show up on your food, like chemical residue?
We haven't tested our food. We've tested our water, and our water did not show chemicals.
Okay.
In a,
I'm sure it comes through the air. So we actually moved out with the idea that we were going to have a lot of bees.
Yeah,
and do a lot of honey.
But Lacey, one thing is, sorry to disturb you. One thing is, we found out in India is, if the chemical is coming through air, like it's an airborne, like sprayed, right?
Right.
The chemical residue shows up on your leaf, but it does not show up on your vegetable, fortunately. But if you're growing a leafy food, you're just fucked.
I know. Well, that's it. We just ate spinach last night. I'm like, I mean, you know, is it really better? I don't know. Because we do have a neighbor who has, he grows corn just to like feed the deer, corn and soy, and he sprays to kill it all. Yeah. And we, all the bees that we've ever had here just die over a period of time because you can't keep them from going to his field. And so we haven't been successful with bees. And if they're, you know, pollinating over there and coming over here, you know, like there's just no, there's no way to kind of contain that.
So have you guys like thought about eco-fencing your land maybe?
I don't know what that is.
Tell me more.
So it's like growing multiple layers of trees at the border of your land.
There is a little bit of a barrier that way, but it wouldn't keep the bees from going over there.
Yeah, no, but what we have seen is if you create an eco barrier, if you create an eco barrier, it stops a lot of chemicals from flying in actually through airborne.
Good. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. So, because in India, you have to understand is we are very intensely focused on agriculture. Intensely. But more people die from agriculture. Like more people kill themselves. Like 4.6% of farmers kill themselves every year.
Wow.
That's to say, it's, I don't know what the percentage is, but I know that farmers have a higher suicide rate than even veterans, like war veterans in the US.
Because chemical companies are very nice, right? I love them to death. I don't hate them at all. so
they're making the world a better place.
Yes. Yeah. One farmer at a time, though. So they play a very nice game where if you don't pay up, they seize your land. Like they seize your land, they take it. But from a farmer's perspective, you would better kill him than take his land, right? Because that's all he got. All he wanted to do was feed his family. Like he did not want a super yacht.
It's the seeds too. It's not just the chemical company. It's the seed companies also.
Fortunately, seeds companies are not that aggressive here. I mean, Bill Gates is trying, let's say.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, like rich people are trying to patent as many seeds as possible. But fortunately, seeds companies are not that effective, because in India, the heirloom seeds, right? Like the seeds that has come from their forefathers has still been preserved. And fortunately, most farmers have not lost the ability to do selective breeding, I would say. So they're like, you know, like they can manage with seeds, but chemical is a big thing. Because
interesting,
a typical, if you did any vegetable growth in an acre, it would cost you around 85% of your income. chemicals.
Wow.
Wow.
So in another 15%, you have to feed your family and get all the diesel and, you know, necessity things for farming throughout the year.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. So if your harvest is down even by 12%, you're fucked.
Yeah.
It's a point of no return by that time.
Yeah, right.
I know.
It's like a gamble every year. Yeah. You just don't know because you can't control the weather. And yeah.
What percent of the Indian diet is meat? Like most, my ignorant
around,
knowledge is that most Indians
I would
are,
say
like,
around
most vegetarian?
30 to 40%.
30 to 40%
is meat based. But apart from that, everything is like just vegetarian.
What would you say animal agriculture looks like?
Majority.
Is it as bad? Is it as bad as the plants?
Do you mean livestock keeping?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
so I, sorry, like I misunderstood it for animal dependent farming. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not that intensive.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because we don't have big ranches here, you know. It's not even allowed to have ranches, like, you know, like huge livestocks you're not supposed to have.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're using it for a dairy purpose, that's different, but you cannot slaughter cows because, of course, it's a sacred animal for Indians.
Right.
I mean, anybody who has seen Simpsons can guess that, right? So
it's our cultural wisdom all comes from.
Yes. It's Simpsons and Family Guy. So it's cows are sacred. So Brits tried to eliminate Indian cow breeds because they saw that our majority of our farming was done through cow manure and cow urine and everything. So they were like, you know, we take away your source, you know, like you will not be farming for a long time. And that was one of their strategies to, you know, bring the economy down. Because when an interesting fact is, Drew, by the way, when Brits entered India, India had 33% of world's economy.
Oh, wow.
And when they left, it was 2.8.
Whoa. My gosh.
So
making the world better.
Yes. The bloody Brits.
One colony at a time.
Yeah.
That's why we kicked them off our land.
Yes. That's what I always say. Like, Indians and Americans have one thing in common, that we all hate the same gingers.
That's right.
Yeah. We are like, you screwed us for 200 years. Now we don't care about you.
Right.
Yeah. So they tried to introduce cow slaughtering. So they were like, okay, we'll pay you to kill, you know, slaughter cows, because it was a form of disrespect to the culture. And they thought by, you know, offending people, you know, they could probably force them into, you know, behaving, right?
Yeah.
Cow or any animal slaughter is not that big. Like, we don't have mega industries here. We have one or two companies on chicken, though, like corporations.
Yeah.
But they're also not big. They're still regional. They're not national.
Okay.
So we're less dependent on meat, but more dependent on grains.
Well, a lot of ours isn't even national anymore now. China owns a lot of our meat manufacturing.
Yes. I think China owns like 40% of Hollywood or something. I don't remember the exact data.
Oh.
Like the land of Hollywood. Like.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's just so stupid. Silly. Like, why would you let them do that?
Well, they so like, you know, in the South, a big food source is pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And the large corporation that runs like 99% of, you know, don't quote me on that exact number, but a large portion of pig production is a company in China. So all the they came in and put all the small farmers out of business in North Carolina.
Drew, so much for like anti-capitalism, right?
Right. Yeah.
Where does it end?
Yeah.
I mean, India definitely knows how dangerous China is because they're our neighbors, right?
Right.
And love thy neighbor is a rule. So, yeah, I mean, I see Americans, and I recently saw a YouTube video, I don't know whether you guys saw it or not, where they were asking young children, like, how do you think food is grown? And one of the young kids said, she said that, I think vegetables are like manufactured in industries. And I felt so sad for that kid's future.
Yeah.
Right? Because imagine having zero contact with nature or soil.
Yeah. And that's where we're going now.
Yeah. And there was a census that said like 13% of Americans don't like to touch soil. yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is that they're missing, like, what they've proven is that that contact with the soil has so many health benefits. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a huge improvement in overall health, your gut bacteria. Children who are raised in on a farm, they're more resilient and they're less sick all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you see these kids who are suffering from major allergies and asthmas and gut health, IBS, Crohn's, you know, it's just on the rise in a massive way. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, they're like, oh, but don't get dirty because then you'll get sick. And
yes.
It's like, no, get dirty so you don't get sick. But it's a really hard flop. You know, people are just really.
Yeah, but also I feel like wrong. I feel like people who are like close to ground, I would say, right, close to reality, they grow up very responsible, because I think they're very acutely aware of consequences. Because you know, you play a Minecraft and you have a garden, you don't water it for 2 days, it dies, nothing happens, right?
Right.
But you know, imagine very your true. Family being dependent on it, and you know, plants don't grow. It's a very sad outcome.
Yes. It's so true. It's not. Yeah. And I think in parenting, that's one of the things that we've learned, is giving our kids these opportunities to have natural consequences in reality.
Yeah.
But that isn't even necessarily me saying, no, you can't do that, or no, that's a bad idea, or punishing them for whatever, which is, I think, when you're separate from nature. Nature does, you know, we call it Mother Earth for a reason. She's got lots of lessons to teach. And if we as parents take on the role of teaching all those lessons, you have a child that feels disassociated with their natural environment, and there's really no recovering from that. Right. I think that's a lot of where, you know, anxiety issues and depression issues come in. And we're seeing that more and more. And, you know, as kids turn into teenagers, turn into young adults, like, they're just floundering because they just don't understand their part in the world around them.
Yeah. I think discipline is a very cruel world in today's era, right? Nobody likes the D word. You know, the D word used to be a human part. Now it has become an integral, you know, dangerous thing, right? Like, how dare you talk about discipline? Like, who needs discipline?
Right.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Who needs joint families? Like, come on.
Right.
We need to be independent. I don't know, independent from what or where. I think these are the same people that talk about freedom or independence that would not survive without a flat screen.
Right.
Right.
It's so fascinating. We've kind of uncovered that a little bit within American context. Culture here is very drawn to those words of independence and freedom. And yet when we do that, when we pull out from society, we have to be really careful that we're pulling out from the right things and not from the community aspects and the parts that are so intrinsic in our, you know, how we're built, designed. Because it's true. Like, the American dream is like, I can do this, right? But doing it alone leaves you feeling, you know, that's where I think too, with these farmers, where a lot of the death comes in is because they feel so alone.
Yeah.
And that's not how we're meant to live. They should not be taking on all of that by themselves. It shouldn't be their load to carry alone.
Yeah.
But that's how we're left. And in the United States, that's for sure been the MO of farmers for the last 100 to 200 years, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, people think like armies are very powerful. Right. No hate against them, because US spends like 16 times more than anybody. Right. On armed forces. I love it.
Another form of gluttony, I think.
Yeah. I know. I'm all for Oppenheimer and hydrogen bombs and, you know, nuclear bombs. I absolutely like them because I want to survive. But what I feel is people who have studied even history, right, understand that when farmers revolt, like, literal kingdoms have fallen, you know, like, when farmers said fuck you to the king, like, that that started the end of that civilization, or, you know, that kingdom as we know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
right now you can look at Polish, like, news, right? Like from Poland, and
yeah,
you know, they tried to do some, you know, swift shit with farmers, and they were like, no, it does not fly here.
Yeah.
Yeah, in France too, they were doing some, they were showing, the farmers were showing them, oh, really? Yeah, that's not going to happen.
It's that, you know, old saying of fuck around, find out, right? Like, you know,
right.
Farmers are really weird people, just leave them alone. I always say this.
Yeah.
Any country, I think it's a wet dream of every powerful person to control that sector, food.
Yeah.
And
it's been interesting because in the US, it hasn't come to that yet.
Hopefully, yeah.
I think because the largest farmers are subsidized so greatly by the federal government,
yeah,
that it will take a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just haven't been pushed that far yet. I will say that, you know, it feels like almost on the horizon, but
well, I think that the American government realizes that, and they're going to placate farmers as long as they can, which probably just means funding them more and more subsidies, which only you know, entrench the problems even further.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be interesting to see how the next decade plays out, because I think the farmland is.
But guys, I don't think we have to wait for a decade. To be honest,
no, not even that long. Yeah,
not even that long, because everybody was running for tissue papers during freaking COVID, right?
Yeah,
like, you guys remember that? And that was not even a crisis per se; it was just a logistical issue.
Yeah.
Now imagine farmers saying, "I just don't feel like growing food now."
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That would. It would be interesting to see. And that's, you know, a piece of why we're really into the, like, connecting the small farmers, because then we aren't reliant on these systems that are clearly about to fail.
Mm-hmm.
It's like putting your money in the stock market when you can see the bottom is about to fall out.
Yeah.
It really makes me think about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I feel like when consumers say farmers are very bad people because they're putting chemicals in food, I'm like, no, because you are the bad person, because you decided to be a weak person and not stand for what you want. And now government subsidizes chemicals, you know, and GMOs and monocropping. So farmers do what he got to do, right? He has to play the system. Yeah. He does not have any other option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Because most farmers survive from season to season.
Someone else is going to step in.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the chemical companies will do it by themselves.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you look at it as in a very macro level, most of the farmers survive from season to season, if I'm right. So if a couple of seasons goes bad, they're done. They're bankrupt. They do not have anything, right? And they're probably in debt.
Yeah.
That's why they're forced to go bankrupt. And farming is not one of those things where you will see rising profits every year like corporations.
Right.
If Apple did not make like $100 million this quarter, it's a bad quarter for them.
Right.
But if commodities price don't rise in a quarter, it's a normal thing. It's a good thing, right?
Right.
So it's like, I think we as a civilization are pushing our farmers to a corner where it's like, you know, are you guys aware of, you know, how we used to hunt buffaloes in the Stone Ages, right? Like,
right.
We just used to rush them and, you know, make them run towards the tip of the mountain and hope that they jump off.
Right.
And that's what we're doing to farmers.
Yeah.
You know, we are marginalizing them. We are taking over their land. We are building houses. And it's going to continue until a point where, you know, that tipping point arrives and either they jump or push off. And both are bad for society.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. And it does feel like there's a land grab happening in the United States of these really super wealthy people. You know, I don't need to name names, but buying up the farmland. And it's like, okay, if we push the farmers to the point where they can't use them, use it, then they're going to sell it to these individuals, and slowly but surely It's like a game of watching a game of Risk play out.
Yeah. And then I see the solution of socialization, like socialization of farmlands like Russia.
Right.
I'm like, yeah. You are dumb fucks. Like you do not know about what you're talking about, because most people are not aware that in World War II, 48 or 49% of the food came from home gardens, not from farming lands.
Yeah.
Because
from the victory right. garden.
Yeah, yeah. Why the fuck would you work for government for food? Like, it doesn't make sense, right? But all the housewives and, you know, people who did not participate in war, they were like, okay, you know what? Like, we have to do something about food. And that's how they sustained. Mm-hmm. And once governments realized that, they had to correct it rather quickly.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like communal gardening or farming doesn't work. Because there is always that one lazy motherfucker who doesn't want to work.
Right.
And he just upsets the whole formula of it. Because at the end of the day, we are built to grow our own food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And when you see someone else taking your food and they're not working for it, you're like, yeah, I may not like you for a long time from now.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what, you know, countries are doing right now, isn't it? Anytime there is even a small sign of famine or less rains, the first thing they do is stop the export.
Yeah.
Right. I saw even, because I have a couple of brothers over in the United States, I saw they were like, I cannot get Indian rice here because it's banned. Like, Indian government said, we are not exporting rice until we get next harvest because we do not have enough in stockpile. Like,
yeah.
It might not last the season. And
wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very similar to Canada banning maple syrup at the end of the season, like at the end of the consuming season, at least, because that's human nature, right?
Hold on to it.
Yeah. It's like if it's between you and me, it's me every time. And that's the attitude that, you know, people have. And in India, we have something called as GPOs, or a couple of farmers get together and form a corporation, right, to sell their products at a better price. But that doesn't work because not everybody is contributing. And especially in organic farming, the problem is to get a better yield, they might be using chemical and still be saying, you know what, it's organic, guys. Right. And there are 10 people in the group and 9 people are working hard, like 9 people are organic, but that one person he's like, meh, let me put some chemical in it.
Right.
Yeah. So is that also prevalent in there, like, because you guys have organic supermarkets now, like, how does that work?
Organic is a, at this point, it's a joke. It's a marketing tactic.
Yes.
I mean,
I agree.
The inspectors can be easily paid off. You know, I'm sure there's people that would argue otherwise, but.
Well, and there's a long list of acceptable chemicals, even within the realm of organic like, what?
I understand that.
And then you talk about, like, you know, how you were talking about, like, the nutritional value of the food. The nutritional value, even at, like, let's say we're not spraying any chemicals on it, there's still no nutritional value.
Yeah, because
it's still being raised. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's still being made in a commercial, commodity-based agricultural system instead of focusing on nutrient-dense small farmers and small, you know, producers. So it's still part of a broken system.
Yeah, definitely. I also feel like, you know, today we buy and sell at quantity, right? Like, I buy 10 pounds of potato, whatever, right? World would be better off trading nutrients, like trading nutrition rather than weight.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Because I feel like that's extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's extremist idea, but
sure,
that would fix like 99% of problems.
Yeah.
Because I saw in India right now, I went to a hospital recently, and I saw that they were testing people for lead and cadmium, like these chemicals that are not supposed to exist in humans. And they're like,
right.
Guys, do you have those in your body? Like,
yeah,
And I asked him, like, why are we doing this? And they said, because of, you know, rampant pesticides and, you know, shelf life products that, you know, they spray on the... Yeah, but I always stay away from using the word preservative. I'm very afraid of that. Oh, okay. Because it's okay. It's not a big industry. It's just like $280 billion industry in the world. The preservatives industry. So I'm like, yeah, it's just shelf life products.
Yeah, so let's not mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, I am seeing that right now in India, and I'm very scared when something happens in India because we are somewhat weird people. Like, we don't do normal things here. like we don't, Indians don't like laws. Like, if you said, don't park your vehicle here, people will park exactly right there, exactly opposite that sign. You know, it's a form of showing the middle finger to the government, you know.
Watch me.
Yeah. I mean, guys, like, you'd be surprised to know this or even laugh at it. Like, if government doesn't want you to park in a particular space, right, they would not say no parking. They would say it's pay and park. People like, yeah, whatever. I don't want to park. I don't want to pay you money, man.
I love it.
Yeah, so that's
games.
Yeah, so that's what, like, here people do. And because you see, like, TikTok right now, you know, people are talking about ban of TikTok, right, in your motherland. In India, it was banned in 2017.
Really?
Oh,
I did not know that.
TikTok and another 100 plus apps who were taking, you know, database were banned back in 2017. And it was a very weird move because, of course, a lot of celebrities lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. But somehow, you know, it goes on.
Right.
Now, you know, like, people in the United States are talking about banning it. I don't know how you guys want it to go down. Yeah, but
I don't either.
I've heard that, like, you know, it's a form of US censorship to ban it.
Well, they have talked about banning it before, so it's interesting that it came back up again. I'm not really sure.
I think most regular people don't understand that, I feel like. Because the reason they got banned in India is very simple. India government said, you take my data, right? You keep it in Indian servers. You do not take it to Chinese servers. And they were like, no, we cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay. Tata, bye-bye, see you. Like, you know, like, go away.
Yeah.
And it's the same law that they apply to Google also. Because Google was storing our data in Europe and US servers. And US used to use it to force India into doing something. Always.
Mm-hmm.
So Indian government was like, okay, guys, like, you better store my data here, right? Like, Indian data and Indian data centers. And, you know, government will provide you security to do so. And we'll also provide you subsidies to do so. But you have to store it here. If you take it elsewhere, we don't want it.
Yeah.
So
I would say the argument here has been, like, why is TikTok the thing that we're worried about? China owning, because China owns, you know, a large part of our agriculture. So they own a large part of our real estate. They own,
guys,
you know, all these
guys,
things.
Only your government can monitor you. Nobody else.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's their right to monitor you.
Yeah.
Nobody else can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
It's almost like punishing a kid. Only you can do it. If somebody else does,
yeah, exactly.
So they,
yeah,
you know, Uncle Sam is like, how dare China monitor my people?
Well, I think what it indicates is how valuable that data is, you know, like, to me. Now I'm like, oh, they care that much about it. Yeah. What do they know about how powerful it is that I am not even really paying attention to?
Yeah, but Lacey, you have to understand, you know, the threats, you know, by Meta, right? They track your heartbeat. People don't know that.
Yeah.
Just go through their terms and services.
Oh my god.
They track your heartbeat. They track shit ton of stuff like motions and eye movements and everything. So it's like
where you go.
That's like, you know, it's like they made the Apple Watch and they're like, yeah, everybody needs an Apple Watch. Strap that on your wrist so we can track more of your data. That's why they want that on there.
People are willing. They're like, what do I have to hide? It's like, well, you won't know until.
Yeah. And then people found out that their insurance premium was raised.
Turns out you're fat and we know it because your watch told us.
We know you're not exercising.
Turns out you do not exercise. Yeah. Turns out you are a lazy piece of shit. So here you go. So how rampant is like proposal for carbon tax in the United States?
You know, that's not something we really follow.
Again, it's not something they care about the little guy with as much. So we'll see how it pans out. I think there's lots of like, you know, they're raising the cost of energy slowly and surely. So the cost of electricity is more. So they're trying to push everybody towards solar. And there's a lot of little things that they're doing to kind of squeeze us into that.
Do you guys know that in Canada, they're planning to put a rain tax? Does anybody know that?
Rain?
Yeah. So they will calculate how much rain fell on your property and they will tax you on that.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That's the kind of thing that's going to tip the United States citizens over the edge.
Yeah.
You know, we threw a revolution for tea. You know,
Tennessee just passed a law that the federal government could no longer spray like weather enhancing technologies over Tennessee. That just happened. So I don't know if that'll start to happen across the country. I hope that the rest of us start to take that and run with it. But I think it's fascinating because for years they've told us, oh, we don't even do that. We don't do that. We don't try to impact the weather, but you know, we're all aware of the contrails here. Yeah. You see them, you know, but
it's all right. Anyway, you know, that Leo DiCaprio movie, Don't Look Up.
Right.
Don't look up. Yeah, don't look
up. You don't know.
Yeah. And then you have a bunch of flat earthers saying Earth is flat and all other planets and all.
It's a fun balance. There's really both very far right, very far left. That's where America is right now.
Yeah. Guys, like, okay, let me ask you one fun question. Have you like read this survey where 53% of Americans said that they could fight a lion?
Fight a lion?
Yes.
What? Fight a lion and win, or just fight a lion?
No, fight a lion and survive, not even win.
53%
with a weapon or without a weapon?
No, just barehanded, like
barehanded.
Yeah,
53.
Yeah, huh? 53.
Wow.
And I'm trying to think where I would land.
I'm an
dude. You better be no.
I better be no. These people don't know what a lion is.
You haven't seen me fight a lion.
These are the same people that don't know that chickens lay eggs. I mean,
yeah. And 47% of them think that they can fight an alligator and win. Like they can get away with it.
My goal is to never be in proximity of
either of those.
Either situation.
What about a bear?
A bear,
yeah,
black or grizzly,
any bear.
Yeah, no, I think I would just lay down and pretend like I was dead.
Okay,
my
because
plan.
40% of people think they can fight it off with bare hands.
Fight it off, wow,
yeah.
Wonder what the stats are.
Is this an international survey? Because I'm curious, like where other countries fall in.
No, it was an American survey conducted by an American publisher because they wanted to know how intelligent their people are because. Now, apparently, mathematics is racist. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. You cannot say 2 plus 2 equals 4.
2 is not 4.
Yeah. I got so angry on that lady.
That's not fair.
I got so angry. I'm like, if tomorrow you have 2 children, are you able to say 2 children or are you able to say these many children? I don't understand that. Because her whole argument was 2 plus 2 can be 5.
Wow.
The truth. We're shifting here.
No, I think, let's see, it can be a true statement if you're in like a bizarro world, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, for me as an outsider, right? Because any of my opinions do not have any stake or any impact on America, And when I see United States, it almost feels like Joe Biden is the representation of America. Because they want to say something, but they don't know what they are saying. And they think the right message is being put out.
And I'm going to need that clip. I want that clip.
You don't know what they're saying. Oh, well, I mean, the alternative is that, and, you know, we're pretty far away removed from both sides of this, but the other side is saying so many things that you think is true, and just by saying them, you make them true is what the other side is.
But yeah.
Anyway, so we're in a tough place. Just pray for us, please, Ganesh.
I don't think prayers are enough at this point. Yeah. So what you have to do is you buy a land in India and, you know, hold it as a reserve. And the day you get in trouble, just come back here, you know.
Come back.
I like it. All right. It's not going to be in a 10 minutes.
I was going to say, I'm not going in 10 minutes.
That's okay, because right now, ton and ton of Americans are coming to India and buying farmlands and doing homesteading.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's easier. It's cheaper here. Because, you know, if I want to give you an idea of how good our economy is compared to your shit box, sorry to say, you could, if you were like four people, right? Like, husband, wife, and two children, let's say a typical family, right? In a month, in a month, you could spend about, let me see this, and you are around $1,000.
Okay.
For food, accommodation, school, healthcare, property, transportation, entertainment.
Wow.
You could drink like a freaking, I don't know, the best. I don't drink alcohol, sorry, so I do not have an idea, but probably a very good rum or a whiskey every day, and you could still not meet $1,000 target.
Oh my gosh, we're wealthy. We're just living in the wrong place.
Yeah, that's what I always say. Americans are in the wrong place, wrong time. By the way, do you guys know this, that it's cheaper for you to come to India and get a like a plastic surgery and enjoy a 2-month holiday and then go back.
Yeah.
Same for like dental care and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why any of my family or, you know, typical Indians come back to India for treatment.
Makes sense. Yeah.
They're like, right now I'm seeing like too many Instagram accounts popping up, like Americans in India, and they're doing homesteading and they're doing, you know, more like self-sufficient projects. But the problem is they bring their whiteness with that.
Yeah.
Right. So they apply.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. They apply their redneck technology to India and it doesn't work sometimes.
Right.
And there are some people who are very like good with locals. So, you know, because in India, it's like if you're climbing on a branch and you're cutting off the same branch, people will be like, dude, you're going to fall off. You know,
right.
Sense. But stubborn people do not understand that. They're like, am I really falling down?
Right.
I'll just catch the next branch.
Yeah.
So Indians are like, man, whatever. Like, yeah, go enjoy. So yeah, guys, move to India. I always, you know, I have two proposals for Americans, right? Either you move to India or you run for Congress. You choose any one of it.
Oh, I definitely would rather move to India.
Yeah, no doubt.
I was hoping on you choosing number two. Yeah, because do you guys know who is the most successful trader, like stock trader in the world?
No.
Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Of course. That makes me laugh. I think I actually have heard that before.
Yeah, she has multiplied her wealth by 634 times.
Well, when you're there's so many layers to that's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's America in a nutshell right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because right now there are multi-million dollar AI companies who are tracking trades of congressmen.
Wow.
And they're like, they're blatantly like, you know what? Track Nancy and just copy her strategy. You'll get away with a lot more money. And that's what people are doing right now. Could you imagine?
So because she has all the inside. I mean, she's the ultimate insider, right?
Yes, yes. Like, because you guys remember that whole fiasco about Tesla not getting the factory, right?
Yeah.
And just before it was approved, she bought shit ton of Tesla. And she bought it, I think, like 40 minutes before the announcement or something.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and they announced it. It, I think, doubled in price for like a day or two. She just cashed out.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there are conspiracy theories about it. You know, like the Nord Stream getting blown up, right? So yeah. Nord Stream is like the gas pipeline from Russia to Europe. And just before it got blown up, all congressmen were buying like gas processing plants. So what they would do is they would extract LPG, they would freeze it, like bring it down temperature and store it in, you know, tanks and export it to Europe. And shit ton of congressmen bought stocks for that.
Oh my god.
And as soon as Nord Stream hit,
they were run by the mafia. This is what's happening here. It's just a mafia.
It makes me think of, did you watch that interview with Putin and
oh my god, Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson. Oh yeah. Yes. Did you watch that?
Yes.
It's just like what he was saying versus what we're taught mm-hmm. in America was like completely different.
I can give you a live example, Drew, if you want to. In 1971, sure. India wanted to test its own nuclear weapon. Because people don't know this, but we were one of the founders of United Nations. Like, we were supposed to get a permanent membership, like United States and Germany and all these countries. But US said, not today. So we did not get a permanent membership. So we are one of the, you know, primary powers of World War One and Two. We lost more than 6 million people in World War One and Two. Britain still today owes us around $60 trillion for, you know, all the things that they bought from us in World War One and Two, supplies.
And never paid. Yeah.
But the Queen died, but we still owe, you know, like, we're not getting money. That's why I think they all are getting cancers out there.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 1971, we wanted to test our own things, right? Weapons and of that sort. And United States was like, we are going to team up with China and make sure that does not happen. And they dispatched like, I think 65% of their Navy, including nuclear warheads, to India. And they wanted to line up the shore and warn us, like, you better not do it, right? And that's when Russia stepped in for India. Like, Russia was like, okay, you cannot bully another democracy. And that was it was.
Yeah.
And Russia sent 8 nuclear warheads and all the submarines. And it came up the water, right? So it was visible through satellite images. And they opened up their silos. So that US spy satellites could click pictures and they saw literal warheads loaded in the submarine. And they were like, okay, it might not be worth it. Let's back off.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Wow. Yeah. You don't hear about that in our history.
Yeah, dude. Even recently when, you know, this whole Ukraine-Russia happened, you guys might not know, but Biden threatened to put sanctions on India.
Oh no.
Because we purchase gas and fuel from Russia. But compared to Europe, we purchase only 3%. Like if Europe bought like 100%, we bought 3% of fuel and they were like, we are going to sanction you. And thankfully, our foreign minister was like, yeah, dude, go ahead and do it. Because what was happening is, Drew, the problem is most of European countries were using India as a shell company. So what were they doing?
Yeah.
They asked India to buy gas, right? It came to India. They bought it from India. So it's an Indian gas.
Wow.
and India was like, okay, go ahead and do it. I don't give a shit. And they could And they could not because, you know, they were caught with their pants down because this was the first time, I think, in Indian history when we said no. Because we have always bowed down, always.
Good.
Yeah. And, you know, like, they always threaten us because we buy weapons from Russia. Now, America is more angry because we are developing weapons on our own, like indigenous technology. Yeah. And they don't like it. So you might not know this, but ISRO, ISRO is like Indian Space Research Organization. It's like NASA for India. It's the only space organization that's not allowed on ISS, like International Space Station.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And
that's terrible.
Yeah, and their reasoning is you guys did not fund, like you did not pay.
Wow.
Right.
But,
okay.
But so did the Japanese. Japanese did not pay. Right? Because the International Space Station was majorly developed by US and Russia.
Hmm.
Right.
But yeah. you allow Europeans to go there. You allow every other country apart from India. So now our prime minister said, okay, you know what, stuff it, we'll build our own by 2028. And we...
Nice.
Yeah, and you know we are building at 8% cost of the original space station. So now they're even more pissed. But NASA is demanding access to our space station. They're like, we demand, you know, like we will enter. And we're like, okay, good luck with it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
So
it's also, why can't we all just get along? I mean, even that, it's just such a silly, like, what doesn't, wow. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hate that, like, cut things short, but mm-hmm. I have to go to the bathroom.
No problem. Anyways, we are, you know, walking towards the end of the episode. So thank you very much for being here, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the patience that you had even when things got, you know, mixed up. So thank you very much.
Oh, it's all good.
Oh yeah, no, this was so fun. It's really cool to connect with somebody and hear your different perspective on what's going on, because I think we do feel very manipulated maybe in what we're told. So it's mm-hmm. really neat to get your perspective on all of this.
Yep. Thank you so much. And whenever you want to, whenever you're frustrated, just give me a call. You know, we can work on that. Like, we can. I can probably help you with your anxiety issues. And you know, like, if you want to get something off your chest, just give me a call, because I love to talk to people, and I especially love to talk to people who have brain. That's my kind of speciality, right? So thank you so much for that. And to my audience, guys, this is the end of the episode. And if me, Lacey, and Drew did not trigger you or upset you, we are sorry. Yeah, we are truly sorry that we could not do that. We hope to achieve that in some day. And if you are offended by it by somehow, I would ask you to go sit in a room and ask yourself, why was that? Maybe that is the change that you're looking at. So with that thought, thank you so much. And until next episode, don't kill yourselves. Be peaceful. Behave. Yep. Thank you so much.